Know it, but don't know it. Because then you're kind of improvising, and then you can feel it more.
Just
you know what I mean?
We're back.
We're back. We're going back. We're going strong. You know how it is, and you know how we do it.
We don't have to do it like that.
No, not like that. But you know what I mean.
Yeah. Just somewhere between that and this.
Yeah. I think we're good.
Hello, guys. So,
hello.
Or maybe rather,
hello. Current,
you can maintain enthusiasm with your like points. All opinions we express in this podcast are solely our own, so please take everything with a grain of salt. After all, the podcast is called The Medical Idiots for a reason.
We're really on top of this with these disclaimers. Like.
Yeah. We is.
Covering our asses.
We're really trying not to get sued.
Yeah.
So, I think we could start off with the biggest change, which has happened this year, which is, you know, just being back at uni.
Yeah.
How does that feel, guys?
Feels good.
It feels good. It feels great.
Feels lovely.
I don't want to go back to online. I'm kind of scared we're going to.
Yeah, I'm really nervous that we're going to be back. But it's so good to be back in real life. Because, holy crap.
It's such a different type of energy.
Yeah. No, because now we have base groups. So they're more presentation based. And they're 4 hours long.
Yeah.
And if those were online, you know, camera off, nap.
I dare say in our last cluster I learned more from one of those 4 hour tutorial sessions or base group sessions than I did in whole other blocks prior to it that we might have done online.
It's insane.
I think that it's nice to see how we kind of took everything for granted until we went online and we're like, whoa, I miss class. Like, who says that?
I miss a whiteboard. I miss a whiteboard.
Or a blackboard, you know.
Yeah.
Dude, anything I can just draw.
No, I hate to be the pessimist, but it's kind of scary to think that when this episode is released, we might be online again.
I really hope not.
But
like, the reason why online doesn't work in PBL and you know, things where you have to present is because you can have your notes open all the time. And somebody is like, oh, who wants to talk about this? Oh, yeah, I can do it. And then they're just reading the Wikipedia article about whatever it is we're talking about. It's like, and just, it's like the most monotone thing ever. And then they try and mix it up a little by saying, oh, yeah, actually, it, and then they talk like this. And, ooh, well, that's what I did.
Sometimes you can just recognize that if you prepared for the base groups or the presentations, at least last year. Or for the cases in that case. You can just, if you prepared using a certain book, you can just, you memorize the sentences that people are saying. You just see, oh, got that from Kaplan, got that from Bears,
I had
that
from Geisen.
A fun thing to do is if we go back online, just open Amboss on the side. Everyone's just going to be reading that.
Yeah. No, I had a point where somebody would be talking and in my notes would be the exact same thing. It was like a script.
It was just
it was amazing.
Control C, Control V, easy.
But yeah, that's not the only change we have this year, right?
No.
So there's also a big change in what we actually have to know.
Yes.
Because now we're looking at pathologies, we're looking at differential diagnoses and all these other big words.
And if I'd like to add to that, everything is in context of the patient.
Yeah.
Not context of the disease, context of the patient.
It's a whole different mindset. Instead of going from this disease has these symptoms, you're going from, oh, these symptoms can be this disease.
Yeah.
Like, differential diagnosis has never been this important, and making a proper differential diagnosis is probably the most, one of the most important and also one of the most difficult things to do.
No, definitely. No, I think it's become way more important, but it's also a lot more interesting because you really change your way of thinking.
Yeah.
It's not about knowing theory. Well, of course, it's part of that.
Yeah.
But it's more about the knowledge you have, how do you use it? Rather than, oh, this is that, and it has that exactly.
Mm-hmm.
It's being able to recognize it, but also seeing the overlap between other things.
I think one of the best improvements of this year is, like, it's such a nice transition between the parts where you're learning a lot, and now you're using what you learn, and now it's so much problem solving as well.
Yeah. Mm.
But you have to stay on your feet, because if we are meeting these patients, you know, like the way you work out certain problems may not apply to a certain patient. So you have to work with the patient as a human, and you have to work with their condition. So it's like a nice interplay of problem solving, but at the same time, you have that close contact with them.
Yeah.
Just quick disclaimer for the people that don't know what a differential diagnosis is. So basically, if a patient comes in with a symptom or a complaint, there's a list of diseases that could cause this that go, like, well, normally you hang the highest probability is ranked number one, then number two, number three, going down in probability of what it's likely to be. Just for the people that don't study medicine. Or
With the main point being it, like, it might be really obviously one thing, but it's so that you don't exclude other things just in case, so you don't get tunnel vision.
Yeah.
And that's the main point of it.
Yeah. Because obviously there's also a huge change in our workload. So you guys might have noticed where actually up until like 12 studying.
Yeah.
But for me, the biggest difference is that right now we're studying things that we're actually possibly going to use.
Yeah.
Whereas in the past it was studying, I mean, different pathways or whatever, which is definitely relevant. But when you're actually working in the clinic, this is the stuff you need to know.
Yeah.
Mm.
You also see that the sources and stuff also change. So like in year one and two, you're mostly using books, physiology, anatomy, stuff like that. And now you're also transitioning to external sources like guidelines.
Up-to-date.
AMBOSS, up-to-date, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Just more clinically relevant stuff. And then with the workload, as you said.
It's definitely gone up.
Yeah.
There's no doubting that. But
can we also address a stereotype real quick? Because I, you know, like on different forums or online, I get the general impression that a lot of, let's say, residents or maybe even the doctors who have to supervise these students, they can be a bit, I don't know, strict. And I always read this like, oh, you know, these doctors, they're a little bit mean to me.
This resident's killing me.
This resident's killing me. Oh my God, he's such an asshole.
Sue me.
But in our experience, I don't know if I can speak for you guys, but we have had some really, really cool doctors who've been supervising us for these patient contacts. Like,
but I don't know if that's because they are such nice doctors or that is because we're still third year students. So next year we'll actually start our internships.
And then we're expected to know.
And then the whip comes out.
And then,
the cane.
Then the whip comes out. Yeah, then they might get a little bit tougher on us.
You know.
Because then we actually start making decisions that are impacting the patient. Now it's still you're interviewing or you're doing a patient consultation with a real patient that comes in with an actual complaint with an actual problem, but the doctor is still there and she's still basically under supervision predominantly of the doctor. But next year you're actually going to have a little bit more responsibility, and over the years of course this goes up, so I can imagine they are a little bit tougher.
They'll get tougher.
The more power you can exert, the more responsibility. Shout out, rest in peace, Uncle Ben.
What?
Spider-Man.
Spider-Man. Yeah, I know Uncle Ben, but why the coat?
What responsibility.
What are we talking about?
Sorry, you wanted to say something.
Doesn't really matter.
Oh, no, I was just going to also say we also got the opportunity to watch some surgeries. And what I was really surprised about was how nonchalant. I'm not saying, okay, that's the wrong word. That's the wrong word. But it was mostly, like, they're more relaxed. Because the first one I went to was a laparoscopy. And I really...
For the people that don't know, a laparoscopy is that you basically go in...
It's an exorcism, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, I can explain.
You can.
Pretty much, it's when you use very small incisions and then a camera to actually do a small-scale operation. So
normally it's within the abdominal.
It's usually within the abdomen, and it was an abdominal one, where it's usually like putting in a stoma or something like this, and this prevents from opening large cuts, so it's a lot safer for the patient. And then they'll use more like smaller equipment to get in through small holes, and then use a camera to look inside everything and then see how it goes. So I got to watch one of those, and at first, I'm nervous. It's the first time I'm watching that. I'm keeping my distance. I'm in the corner of the surgery room, just like, that's pretty interesting. And I'm just watching the screens, and the surgeon comes up to me afterwards, like, yeah, how do you find it? He's like, oh, so interesting. It's like, you know, you can actually watch it, right?
Did the surgeon ask you to do anything?
No, she just said, yeah, you can just stand like right next to us and just ask questions and stuff like this.
Because we have a interesting story. It's Lars and Karen, because they, like Timon, also had the opportunity to attend an open heart surgery.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was eventful, to say the least.
So you want to start this off, or shall I start this off?
I don't know, man.
Okay, I think Karan should not tell the story because he's bearing the brunt of it.
Am I bearing the brunt of it?
You are definitely going to be bearing it.
Okay, I'll start this.
Why don't you?
No.
See, Lars is Dutch, so he can be quite direct with his approach, and I think that's the best way to tell the story.
All right. So basically, what happened in the beginning of the block? You sign up for surgery. You can go with Karan and I were the lucky ones that actually got to the surgery, open heart surgery. It was a CABG procedure. It's basically where you do a bypass of the vessels around the heart.
And you would do this if the vessels are clogged up because there's no blood flowing. So you want to bypass it.
It's quite a common surgery in elderly people with chest pain and stuff like that. So basically, we got sent to an operation room, or we got sent away again, because the patient was very complicated operation. It was not just a CABG. There were many complications, stuff like that. So we got sent away, we got sent to another room, and basically they did not expect us to be there. So that was the first issue, so to say. Second to that is when we got the explanation of what was going to happen and what was if we were, for example, to pass out, that we should just sit down and relax. And guess what happened 10 seconds after this was told?
I sat down and relaxed, bro.
Karen?
A little bit background on Karen. Karen is the only one of us that actually knows he wants to be a cardiothoracic surgeon.
I used to think that.
Man almost passed out within 10 seconds without anything happening.
Guys, do not go to open heart surgery or any surgery room without breakfast. Eat your greens.
So that was the first thing that happened. The start. And then, so they went on with the procedure. It started, slowly started, stuff like that. And afterwards, so we were watching, very interesting, because open heart surgery means that they actually crack the chest.
Yeah.
Which was very interesting to see.
A lot of stuff happening. Because they were also working on the arms. So they were getting the vein from the arm and putting that in the heart, which is really interesting.
Yeah, they were getting the artery.
You see all these different people working at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, in
very
own,
relaxed cutting someone's chest open. That was an amazing experience.
Everyone's in their like little zone or whatever.
Yeah, that's something that surprised me as well. They're all really relaxed.
Yeah.
It's not ever like a high
stress
environment. They know what they're doing, they're taking it seriously, but they are relaxed.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like even with the simpler procedure that
was they were so relaxed that when I walked out I was like, I can be a heart surgeon.
Yeah.
Oof.
But yeah, so as we mentioned, we are in the clinic now. I mean, we don't have much clinical experience, but I'm sure we have a first impression.
Yeah, yeah.
So one thing that I noticed is that the way we're taught medicine, in the sense of like doing consultations, especially in, you know, our skills training, is super different to how it's actually done in the hospital.
Yeah.
And of course, there's a difference between we're taught to be a GP and then this is like, you know, in the clinic.
So quick disclaimer again. We get taught to be a family medicine physician. So it's very general, basically.
In our skills.
So that's what we get trained. So in the hospital, we go to specialists.
Yeah.
Specialists focus on a complaint that is very specific to their area of expertise. And the patient has already been to a family medicine doctor.
Yeah.
Or GP in the past, now family medicine. But so just so people know that.
So now we're working sort of, at a different stage, I guess.
Yeah.
To them. So, this is kind of new to us, right? So, what are you guys' first impressions?
First thing I thought was like, oh, so I've been learning all this shit for the last 2 years and now I don't get to use it. Yeah. Because that actually happened. On my first consultation that I had to do, we were with a patient that had suffered from heart failure.
Hmm.
And one of the complaints of heart failure can be ascites, which is fluid collection in the abdomen. Which means you get the distended gut. That's what it looks like. There's a specific test you can do for this to see if it's fluid or fat or something else, which is basically, if you would look it up, it's like wiggling the belly.
And it's called the shifting dullness test.
Yeah. Oh, that's one. That's with the percussion. And then you also have where you can tap the flank and then see if the fluid moves to the other side. Yeah.
What's that one called again?
I don't know.
Isn't it when you flip the patient and then the fluid?
No. That's the dullness shift.
Okay.
So basically, I was trying to perform this, but we get taught it in a very different way. But you have to do it on a patient that's not very mobile. So it's very difficult to basically do it. And then I was just doing stuff and it wasn't really working and the patient didn't know what to do. And the doctor just went, oh, just do this. And he tapped the patient on the flank. You saw the fluid moving. And he was like, okay, test this positive. Very different than how we get taught it. But he was like, it's not very like, I wouldn't say professional, but it's not very neat.
Yeah.
But it works. It's enough.
Yeah. Now I also experienced this. So I'm in a different cluster, like I said last episode, and so I'm got more focus on the abdomen, and I also I got to see a patient with an acute epigastric pain. He had a cholecystitis.
Can you elaborate these terms? Yeah. Because you know I'm a little bit stupid.
You could say.
Yeah, I know. Whoa. Okay, I'll explain. So pretty much that's where stones get in the gallbladder, and the gallbladder will be inflamed because of these stones, and sometimes it can get caught in the ducts that then eventually go to your intestines. But this man had them mostly in his gallbladder itself. But then you want to test for just if there's like pain in the abdomen, you just want to palpate it, so just touch it to see where it's painful. We were taught very neatly to go, you know, each 9 quadrants, and I was going, touching each one very gently. And the surgeon,
if you could see this right now, Tim was playing DJ.
No, and pretty much the surgeon, she's like, yeah, don't do that. That takes forever. And she just went up to the stomach and just starts wiggling it around. She's like, does that hurt, sir? It's like, do it like that. It's like, you try. And I go, like this? And she's like, no, more. And I'm like, so wiggling there.
So how did the patient feel?
He's like, it hurts here. And
But you were just wiggling the whole abdomen.
Yeah. That's what it's about. That's it's to see if test. There's pain. And then, yeah.
I think a point we can derive from this is like, once you get that expertise, like these specialists, they know their way around, and I guess they have their shortcuts, or sometimes they could also be quite rough with it. In fact, we heard a story. So our skills lab trainers who train us in these general physician skills, they told us a story about, so we were learning about this thing called peritonitis. It's basically on the front of your belly. Let's say you get an inflammation and you feel it everywhere. So what Tim was doing, abdomen, it's quite often that if someone has a problem there, that it can become peritonitis and become this inflammation and this really painful thing on the front of their body. And normally these patients can't move. And they told us stories about how doctors would test this by literally just having the patient lie down flat on the table, and they would kick the examination table that these patients were lying on. And the patient would be like, pain. And they're like, oh, you see, that's peritonitis.
Yeah. So how this would work is then if the table moves a little bit, your abdominals, the muscles cramp up, they start to stabilize everything. So that puts pressure on the peritoneum.
Yeah, and then those patients are in pain.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so sometimes like they get quite rough with it.
But overall, it's really interesting to see in the clinic. And we will be exposed to this a lot more over the next few years. We will go full clinical next year.
Yeah.
And so.
No, yeah, it's just interesting to see because it's like, of course, they all learned it, you know, the professional way as well. But I guess in reality, you got to be much more efficient.
Yeah,
exactly.
And because they do it so often, they know what works and what doesn't. Yeah. So it's still having healthcare to a good quality while being quicker.
Yeah. This is not us saying that they are not doing their work properly. It's just that they have so much experience that they know how to be efficient while still helping the patients to the best of their ability.
Yeah.
And because I have not met any doctor yet that was unkind or unfriendly to his patient.
Yeah.
Like they were like...
They were.
There were different levels of how great they were in teaching, but no doctor has ever been bad to a patient. Like,
no.
They just know what to do, which is something like... that I hope to be able to do.
Because you also, like, one example is that we were talking about, like, medical guidelines with a doctor. Like, oh, you have to prescribe these two medications, blah, blah, blah. And then he was like, yeah, but what I do is that I prescribe one medication at a time so that I can see side effects.
Yeah.
Because if you just prescribe two, you don't see the side effects. And if someone has side effects, you don't know what the cause is. So there's a lot of, like, these niche things that doctors do, which is really interesting. And that's something we only see now.
And, like, so maybe, sorry, maybe just a message for our listeners who are not in medicine. When I hear people saying, like, oh, this doctor didn't do this and this doctor didn't do that for me, and they have a negative impression, let's say, based on their treatment, you need to understand that these doctors are trying their utmost best to help you. It's just that their approaches are different. So when you have one doctor, it might not be the same approach as the other doctor. But at the end of the day, they're still doing this for your benefit,
exactly.
No matter how, let's say, unorthodox their methods could be.
One good tip is, if you ever go to the doctor and you're like, oh, why didn't he do this? Just ask.
Yeah.
Just ask.
I think all doctors will say, oh, yeah, because this, or this doesn't indicate that.
Yeah.
Or doesn't need the use of that.
Yeah.
Doctors will be very happy to explain everything to you.
Yeah.
As long as you just don't go on Google and try to find everything out yourself and get rude and all stuff like that.
But, like, even if you do that, just let them know what you think.
Yeah.
And they'll be happy to discuss
because
it with you.
I think the clinicians that I've spoken to, they're always like, yeah, it's great when a patient comes prepared.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because then you can really.
It makes everything so much easier.
Yeah.
Exactly. Also, if they know about their options. But let's get back to year three now. One thing I want to discuss with you, because we told about going back to uni and going back to campus. How has this affected the workload? Because I noticed that if I have to go back to uni, for example, preparing food,
preparing
a little
bit
my
more
bag,
time.
Cycling to uni, stuff like that. Like, it's just that this little bit more
it adds
effort,
up.
Yes.
Yeah.
But over time and throughout the day, this adds up.
Yeah.
How are you guys feeling about this?
It's still,
more
motivating.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, I don't know, that little bit of exercise you get from cycling.
Woo! Karen knows nothing about that.
Yeah, Karen doesn't cycle. Like, yeah.
You have a
Dutch passport, right?
He's lived in the Netherlands from...
How can you have a Dutch passport
or in Maastricht
not cycle? Yeah.
For like, how many? Three, 4 years now?
Three
and
years.
You don't own a bike.
I biked for the first year.
Why don't you bike anymore?
I didn't get a bike.
He has a bike.
You
he just hasn't repaired
bike.
It.
You just haven't
you
fixed it.
You got one 4 weeks ago.
Yeah.
It's a shame. So everybody in the comments, Karen has to cycle.
Yeah. Maybe if I'd add something to your point, like, it's nice to see that I have all these things to juggle, because I feel like it was a stop motion moment. When we were doing everything online, it's like, you know, this is your task, but you're still locked in that position that you're in.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's like, I have to go to different places, like a grocery store.
But you
I got to sacrifice certain things to do more of others, you know?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
you're a little bit more mindful, I think, as well.
Most definitely. And you also have to be good at saying no to things now,
yeah.
I think, which is also really nice.
Yeah.
One skill to develop, I think, during your first year.
How to say no.
Oh, yeah. I learned that one the hard way.
On a later episode, we'll be talking about, like, burning out and study load, pressure, stuff like that. But learn how to say no.
No, like, in my first couple weeks in first year in uni, I think I was signed up to, like, 4 committees. Because... people are like, oh, time, you want to join this committee? I'm like, of course, sign me up. So,
I'm in.
So I did have to sign out of a couple. So it's not like, it is a good skill to learn, and you will learn it.
Yes.
But yeah, I think.
Any other topics regarding year three?
Nothing comes to mind.
No, I think we discussed
that.
Yeah, well, just to recap, I mean, in the clinic, we are on site, although by the time this comes out, we'll have to see how it's going. I can speak for all of us when I say this, are definitely enjoying this right now.
Oh, yeah.
And it's...
I missed this.
Even though there's a degree of imposter syndrome, you have to know that you're still in this privileged position.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Oh, one thing I do want to add, just about being in, like, actually going to the hospital, it's never like it is in the book.
Not like in the book, not like in the series, not like in the movies.
Nothing. Like, it's all symptoms. All symptoms are not exactly like they are.
No, they never present the same way.
Because, it's crazy. So that's why, heads up for anybody.
It depends on the disease. But, like, an appendicitis
Yeah.
is more It's more specific for symptoms than, for example, an MI, which can have so many different presentations.
Yeah.
But even that, like, it's never the same.
Yeah, we had a patient who actually suffered from an MI, and he did not have chest pain. You're like, what?
So the number one sign of MI is chest pain. For the listeners.
And MI is heart attack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jinx, luck.
But myocardial infarction. It's not a heart attack yet. Right? Yeah. It turns into a heart. We don't know. Okay. Don't quote us on this. Thank you guys for listening. I think this was it.
Yeah. So, well, this was it for our first episode. We hope you enjoyed it.
This is our second episode.
Second episode, man.
Oh, this stays in.
Whatever. All you guys got to know is medicine is fucking cool.
Wow.
Till next time.
Let's see ya.
Wait up. Be sure to check out all our socials.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, Time is OnlyFans. And of course, if you have any suggestions for this episode or for episodes in the future, send an email to medicalidiots@gmail.com.
Oh, cool. You. What now?
See ya.
See ya.